You're listening to Free Speech Radio News, filling in for Verna Avery Brown. I'm Aaron Glantz. Today we bring you a Free Speech Radio News special report on daily life in the south of the Gaza Strip. Hundreds of thousands of Palestinian refugees live in Gaza, a 25-mile strip of land on the Mediterranean Sea. Every day holds the potential for conflict, not only with the Israelis who live nearby in highly fortified settlements, but with the major Israeli military presence deployed to protect those settlers and quell protest. Our report was prepared by Raphael Kraft.
At the top of the highest building of the city of Khan Yunis, in the south of the Gaza Strip, the show has been going on nearly nightly since Ariel Sharon made a visit on the Temple Mount in Jerusalem 9 months ago. The machine gun fire echoes end-to-end in the Gaza Strip. Most of the clashes occur at the borders of the Jewish settlements, which cover more than 40% of the Gaza Strip. Every 5 Israeli bullets is a tracer bullet. They draw a line parallel to the ground in the darkness before exploding on the buildings of the Khan Yunis refugee camp. On the top of this building, a kid might look down and call them noisy shooting stars made with iron. It could be the reflection of the sky on the ground, too. Looking up, it looks like a Christmas card nativity scene. The south of the Gaza Strip is a world apart. Through its people's accent and expressions, economic activities, its olive groves and vineyards. In 1948, it became one of the many lands of asylum for the refugees that were expelled from their homes by the Israelis in what is called Israel today. Khan Yunis' 53-year-old refugee camp doesn't look like a refugee camp in the Western imaginary. Concrete buildings have replaced tents. Some houses along the narrow streets have doors with names and addresses. And many camp dwellers are adding an extra floor for the next generation. This house, for example, facing the Jewish colony of Gush Katif, has 3 stories. The brand new top floors is riddled with bullets. In the stairwell, there are stones on the dusty ground and bared electric wires coming out of the unpainted wall. The building has been abandoned by most of its tenants, except the ones living on the top floor. Outside, a donkey, one of the many symbols of endurance and resistance in the Palestinian culture, is pulling a cart full of tomatoes. Beethoven's Für Elise blasting from the speakers of a water truck signals that drinking water is for sale. It's the only source of potable water in the Gaza Strip camps.
I never went to my beach with an ID before. That was the first time, and I was completely shocked. It was very difficult for me, actually, to comprehend and to accept this reality. Immediately, anger filled my being, and I was extremely angry, and I couldn't actually wanted to believe that this thing was actually happening to my own hometown.
Iyas Salim was 19 when he left Khan Yunis refugee camp 20 years ago. In 1948, his parents fled their home in what is now the Israeli town of Ashkelon, some 20 kilometers north of the Gaza Strip. 3 years ago, he returned from Asia to Gaza with a doctorate in political science, hopeful that the Oslo Accords would mean a return to normal life in a Palestinian state. But today, life is still anything but normal. As a child, Salim says he remembers going to beach here at Al-Mawasi, a Palestinian enclave of the Jewish colony of Gush Katif. It's an area that's now under full Israeli control.
From the town, I used to go walk to the beach, which is about 2 kilometers far. And because it's a spacious, beautiful sand dune separating the town, we used to go with my friends and take a walk or play soccer there and take our books and get away from the crowded, congested towns. And the sea, of course, is a beautiful Mediterranean, sandy, golden beaches. This is how I remember the west side of Khan Yunis, which is right now basically an Israeli-controlled area planted with settlements populated or implanted with complete strangers to us who come from Ethiopia or Russia.
The last wave of Jewish immigration in Israel occurred in the 90s when nearly 1 million Russians, not all Jews, settled in Israel. Jewish colonies in the occupied territories of Gaza, the West Bank or the Golan Heights are the necessary vital space for the Jews of the world willing to live in Israel. In Gush Katif Jewish colony, settlers are Ethiopian or Russian, but also French and American. Al-Mawasi is now a Palestinian enclave of the Jewish colony of Gush Katif. In the Oslo phraseology, it is located in Area C, under full Israeli control, whereas an Area A, like the Khan Yunis refugee camp, is under full Palestinian control. Area B is a dual-controlled territory where security is enforced by the Israeli army.
Khan Yunis beach area is called Mawasi. Mawasi in Arabic means an area where a lot of fresh water beneath the surface of the sand or the land. You might see red tomatoes with green plants on a dry sand, but actually the roots of these plants are literally swimming in fresh water. The Mawasi area is rich in mango, in guava trees, orchards, orange orchards, palm trees. It's a truly heavenly place, as I remembered it when I was a kid. The Israelis have built the settlements on a pool, on a reservoir of extremely fresh, good drinking water in an area where water is scarce. And to my shock also, I found out that they send the fresh water to Israel outside the Gaza Strip and resell the fresh water again to the Palestinians to drink it. So they are selling our own water.
This Israeli army checkpoint blocks the road between Khan Yunis and Al-Mawasi. Army posts like this one were set up some 20 years ago when the first Jewish settlements were built. It is located down the hill in front of the Tufa neighborhood of the Khan Yunis refugee camp. The buildings of Tufa facing the Al-Mawasi checkpoint and the Jewish colony of Gush Katif look like a Swiss cheese today. The holes in the sections of wall are innumerable, their diameter too. On April 11th, the Israeli army made an incursion into this part of the camp and razed 30 houses to the ground. 500 people have again become refugees. Some of them have been resettled, but others are determined to stay and have pitched tents on the ruins of their houses. The white canvas tents face down Israeli heavy machine guns as if they were shields.
השאלות שלך, איך אנחנו מרגישים, על מה אנחנו מפנטזים. אם אנחנו מפנטזים, מותר לנו, כן, לא מלא.
Can you introduce yourself?
Yes, my name is Yaniv, and I live in Tel Aviv, and I like to be here.
He is among the 5,000 Israeli soldiers protecting the 5,000 Jewish settlers living in the Gaza Strip. He is based at the Al-Mawasi checkpoint, facing the demolitions.
Why do you like to be here? It's all destroyed around.
If we don't see that what we have a sea and we have a pastoralic and the ocean, like the ocean, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's a great, it's a very attractive place.
Okay. But sometimes people are shooting here and there and you're not scared?
It's usually, you know, in Tel Aviv we have bomb and Netanya today we have a terrorist bomb that... killed 4 people and 40 or 50 people in Jews. Okay. No.
So you think it's safer here?
The Al-Mawasi checkpoint is the inevitable passage for those living in the enclaved area of Al-Mawasi who want to visit relatives, go to the hospital, or sell vegetables in the full Palestinian-controlled area of Khan Yunis.
And so you're a reservist, that's it?
I reserve you 3 weeks, yeah. 4 weeks.
What is your job normally?
Air conditions and advertising, you know, copywriting.
Okay.
It's the greatest jobs.
Do you consider this as holiday for you?
50 holidays and 50 walk. 50-50, you know, okay. Half and half, you know. Okay. And it's an okay vocation. I see that like a vocation.
Okay. And how is the relationship with the settlers behind?
With who?
With the people living in Gush Katif.
Ah, it's a good relationships.
Yeah.
Yes. They don't bother us.
And how is it going on with the Palestinian people coming?
Passage is not easy. Only registered inhabitants of Al-Mawasi are allowed in and out. They carry a number so that the Israeli authorities are aware of who and how many of them are in or out. Representatives of non-governmental organizations and United Nations officials need special permits to get in, but they're not always granted. Furthermore, Al-Mawasi inhabitants are subject to curfews, which are sometimes enforced for several days. Ambulances are often turned away. Passage is only allowed by foot. Farmers load their trucks in Al-Mawasi, drive to the checkpoint, unload their trucks, pass the goods over the concrete wall of the checkpoint, then load them onto another truck waiting on the Palestinian side to drive to Khan Yunis market.
And with the Palestinian people coming, is it okay?
Okay. Sometimes there's people that they're disturbed and shooting and shouting, I mean.
What is life for you?
Life for me is to dive, is to drink something good.
Yes.
Chicks, you know, girls, mm-hmm. to enjoy, you know, pubs and discotheques and clubs, you know, parties, DJs, you know, Amsterdam, house, trance.
You mainly listen to house, techno?
When I go out and when I'm in my home, in my place, I listen to rock music, you know, like Radiohead, Pixies.
You tell me when my questions are not good, you know. Do you use your weapon sometime here?
No, it's not my. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So you're an American citizen and you live in Israel?
Yeah, we have dual citizenship.
What?
We have dual citizenship. We're American citizens and Israeli citizens.
Can we... 150 kilometers to the north in Tel Aviv's central open air market, these two young Israeli ladies who immigrated from the United States 3 years ago, wearing miniskirts and figure-hugging t-shirts, are on their way to Tel Aviv Beach after finishing their day of shopping.
Look, if you live in Israel, you have to live your life day by day, and you can't... I chose to be here, so I don't want to live my life in fear, thinking that every time I go on the market or every time I go on a bus, something is going to happen. I mean, I just live my day like I'm supposed to. I go to work, I come home from work, I go out with my friends, and I don't like to think about it.
I agree with that, but also you have to keep in mind, you know, you have to, you know, avoid situations. You know, don't put yourself in, like, situations, I don't know, like in malls, like on Fridays or on Sundays, you know, in, like, really crowded places, you know, because... I don't know, you never know. You know, a lot of things can happen.
Yeah, but the Shuk is like the center of... It's a big thing in Tel Aviv. People go there, it's the main marketplace. It's something that people do every day, go to the market. I'm not gonna...
You can't lock yourself up at home. You can't, you know, you have to live your life. And if it's your time, it's your time.
And what if the bombing continue?
My mother's gonna come here and pick me up by the neck and take me home. I don't know.
If the bombing continues, I don't know. I mean, you know, they're saying already that, you know, there might be, like, war or something. So, I don't know.
This situation has been going on for a long time. Maybe it's worse now, but it's not something that's going away very quickly. No, so I'm not...
Stop. You think that you are used to what is going on in a way?
Yeah, yes and no. Because we were here for, like, 3 years, and we already know the situation now, but we're still foreign to the situation. We're still, you know, away from everything. So,
and how do you see Mr. Sharon's policy right now?
Actually, I try to stay out of politics. I don't watch the news. I don't really want to know what's going on, because I'd rather just live my life and enjoy myself than to get into political debates with people and to sit and think about the situation. I came to Israel because I love the country and I just live my life.
Right now I don't really know, because I'm not really into also the politics thing, but I think Sharon was a good choice for Israel, and I think he's just going to do good.
Why a good choice?
because I think that... Because Israel is, you know, is our country, and it's like the Jewish country, and I think he's just gonna make it so we can keep, you know, the Jewish country to us, to the Jews.
They all tried. He's asking you what's different about Sharon. Why do you like Sharon better than the other one?
Barak, because Barak wants to give land to other people. You know, to the other people. You know, and Sharon wants to keep the land, you know, in Israel.
And what do you think about this situation going on in the territories?
I don't know. I think we should stop right here. Okay.
You don't know?
No. I don't know. That's it. I have nothing more to say.
Here are the narrow streets of the refugee camps in the Gaza Strip, in Rafah, a few kilometers south of Khan Yunis, at the southernmost point of the Gaza Strip. It is a long journey to come back to Rafah. The south of the Gaza Strip is isolated by the presence of an Israeli checkpoint in the middle of the 40-kilometer-long strip. If Israeli citizens are not aware of the reality of the occupation, Palestinians living in the northern part of Gaza, too, do not know about the atmosphere in the narrow streets of Rafah or Khan Yunis. There are few journalists here.
Okay.
If clashes mainly occur in between Palestinian urban areas and Jewish settlements, the Brazil refugee camp in Rafah is side by side with the Egyptian border. But the road marking the limit between these two Arab territories is under Israeli military control, as well as the custom and the immigration. It is surrounded with walls on both sides. It is named the Philadelphia Road. The sound of the engine and the cloud of dust came from the west, carried by the wind of the nearby but not accessible Mediterranean Sea. The tank stops for a minute in a place where the wall on the Palestinian side has been left open for eventual incursions by the Israelis. The armored vehicle, mounted on caterpillars, looks like a mechanic jailer or metallic guard dog. On its top, a tall turret foretells the presence of a soldier, maybe two, checking the Philadelphia Road and its vicinities with binoculars. In the isolated south of the Gaza Strip, there are few who had the chance or the misfortune to see an Israeli soldier. The shells around their bodies, their vehicles and their outposts are too thick or too high for a curious eye to distinguish them. Most of the children have rarely seen an Israeli civilian, but the soldiers are here. The streets of Rafah are not bothered by the surrounding road. There's an atmosphere of déjà vu. A collective taxi stops in front of a barbershop. One of its passengers goes out of it for a haircut. Children call out to the foreign passerby, thinking he's a Jew. A woman, accompanied with her daughter, gets the equivalent of 50 cents out of her wallet for a kilo of tomatoes. Nearby, an old man, lying in the middle of hundreds of watermelons, remaining unruffled, is listening to his busted radio. Mahmoud El-Shahir from the Brazil refugee camp in Rafah remains unruffled too. He has been living in his tent for 2 months now. He mounted it on the ruins of his toy shop. It was also his house.
The 2nd of May, in the early morning, about 12 o'clock, we noticed that the tanks and bulldozers coming from that way. They start bulldozing without any pre-notice or attention or anything. Just they start bulldozing the houses. I left my home with the pajama. I don't have time to put on my clothes. And I spent maybe 10 days with the pajama here. And you see my clothes still underneath the ruin of my house. Everything is ruined. Everything is smashed, completely smashed. So and then at 7 o'clock in the morning, they left the site after they destroyed everything.
Do you mind if we make a tour around your house, showing me what has been destroyed?
Just come in, please. PC, personal computer. This is my cash machine. This is my cash machine. This is my toys. This is the toys. Christmas lights. You see all this, my roots. I told you that I have a library here on this site. You see the crashing? Everything is crashed. This is my chauffage. This has been the site of my shop. You see the toys right there and there.
Where was your room?
Right over there. The house has been right over there.
You mean 10 meters or 20 meters away from here?
Pardon?
It was a big house.
No, really, it's just a small house, not big house. Four rooms. And that's all. This is my icebox. Some of my clothes. See? Some of my clothes. Well, this is my house right in here. I have a small garden in my house. As you see, everything is crashed. Everything is destroyed. It's a destructive world. Nobody refused the peace. But look here. How you could find the peace in this ruin? Can you take this ruin and give out peace? I don't know what can I say. I myself, I'm looking for the peace. I don't. I'm very agree to live together and live together with them. But suppose, put yourself in my situation. What you can say? What can I say? I told you about. The original problem, we have to live together. Why not live together? We have enough land, and they have enough land also in Palestine. Why did we not live together? Why did not let us live here? What can I say? I told you about this situation.
What's your name?
Rafael.
What's your name?
Rafael Bogilla.
My name is
Rafael.
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 My name is Mus'ab.
Mus'ab.
I am Mahmoud.
Mahmoud.
I am Fadi.
My name is Jaber.
I am Mahmoud.
I am Is Agdra.
Correspondent Raphael Kraft in Gaza. You can listen to this broadcast and every Free Speech Radio newscast online at www.fsrn.org. There you can also view photographs of the Gaza Strip, which complement this broadcast. The photographs are by Laurent Loubet. This broadcast and the accompanying photographs at www.fsrn.org.